I want to ask the question which has just been read for us. I've asked you some silly questions this evening. The Bible asks very wonderful questions. Questions like, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? And this question, which is here in Hebrews 2, which we've actually printed it on the great sign permanently outside our church, just the first 11 words, how shall we escape if we neglect such a great salvation? The answer, of course, is that we cannot. I grew up thinking that I could and would. In my last year of school at Sydney Boys High, I was not a Christian. At the start of the year, I joined a group in the school called SHAC, S-H-A-C, stood for the Sydney High Absentee Committee. 3 or 4 days every week, we would turn up as a group at the school. We would work out how many cars we had, and then we would leave. We went to every beach, park, fun place we could find. And in the winter months, because our uniform was grey, we swapped our ties. We looked like young businessmen. We went to every theatre, museum, airport, hotel, and took photos under clocks. In the middle of the year, the school photographer came. It was his job to take the photos of the cricket team, the rugby team, and all the Year 12 classes. The SHAC group gave me the job of going to the headmaster to ask him if we could have our SHAC group also photographed and put into the school magazine. He was losing his grip on the school. I explained that SHAC, S-H-A-C, stood for the Sydney High Animals Club, and that we took in little stray cats and dogs. Birds with broken wings. He was deeply moved and he said, yes, we could have our photo taken with the school photographer and have it put in the school magazine. I then asked my final question, which is, would you, sir, sit in the photo for us and hold the SHAC board for us? And he said it would be a great honour to do so. I tell you this, not because I want to celebrate my dishonesty, but because I want to show you that I honestly thought that I could virtually escape anything with a little bit of negotiation. I could solve anything. I could fix anything. A little bit of smooth talk, some clever bargaining, I could escape anything I wanted to. I wonder whether you think the same. I wonder whether you think there's nothing that you cannot escape if you want to. At the end of the year, September, I was invited to what is called a study camp. It was organised by Christians. It was to help people through the high school certificate. I had missed about 200 days of school that year. It was co-ed and I decided that I would go. Every morning there were Bible talks. I sat in the very back row. I didn't listen, but I picked up on that camp that I was in trouble with God. I suspected that I was in trouble with God, but it really hit home to me on that camp. I realised, of course, that I had ignored him, avoided him, I disobeyed him, that I was offside. I realised that my guilty record was unfixable, it was unsolvable, and it was unchangeable. There was no point in pretending, there was no point in lying, there was no point in trying to bargain with God. I was cornered, stumped, convicted, and I was scared. It was the second best thing that has ever happened to me in my life, because it made me appreciate for the first time the escape which Jesus Christ makes possible. Unless you really get the bad news about yourself, you never really get the good news about Christ. And I went home from that study camp on side with God, for the sheer reason that Christ is merciful. That was the best thing that has ever happened to me. It is the best thing that can ever happen to you, 44 years ago. I wonder if you are feeling that you can pretty well sail through anything. A little bit of charm, perhaps some bravery. Maybe you have got through some remarkable things. Maybe you've experienced some tough tests. And you think to yourself, it is all up to me and I can do it. Then it's just possible that there are some things that you cannot solve. There are some strange things inside yourself that you can't solve. There are some anxiety things. There are some people things. There are health things. And you've got no answer. The siege which was in our city last Monday is a good example of being trapped. a tragic event which is very difficult, I think, for a Christmas preacher to avoid. People were caught, as you know, in a terrible trap when a three-second door opportunity came. People grabbed it and ran for their lives. Who would refuse an opportunity to escape? And this is the question in the Bible. How will you escape if you neglect such a great salvation? How will you escape if God opens a door by which you can move from this world to the next and you neglect or reject the door? What hope do you have? I want to think with you just for a minute about the first four words and then a minute about the second or the last four words. The first four words, how will you escape? The Bible knows that we're in a trap. We're in God's world, but we're not in his good books. All people have forgotten God. All people have ignored him. All have avoided him. All have disobeyed him. We've lied. We've longed for things. We've lusted for things. We have failed. We're self-centered. We have a long list of wrongs against our name. We know that we're in a trap. If we made a film of everything you've thought, said and done in the last week and put it up on the screen behind, which of us could pretend it had been a great week? The only way we can really get out of this, or one of the ways we get out of this, the crazy way we get out of this, is to avoid the subject. Somebody has said, avoid thinking about God. Go out in your car, go to a party, read a book, have an argument, send a message, do anything which will distract you from big thoughts of God. The fact of the matter is, though, that there is a conveyor belt on which we stand, which is moving to God. C.S. Lewis said, we're travelling to God at exactly 60 seconds per minute. And the years go by and the decades go by and the funerals go by, and pretty soon we will be at the front of the queue and we will come to meet God. God tells us that we should get help before we do meet him, and Jesus Christ tells us that he is the help that we need. So how will you escape if you reject or neglect the help of God? How do you get to the United States if you reject the transport? How do you get to surf at a beach if you travel inland? How do you get well if you refuse medicine? The answer is you won't. And as we move into God's perfect courtroom where we will give account, and the Bible says we will all appear before him, and we discover as we come face to face with God that he's astonishing, astounding, dazzling, perfect, holy, massive, faithful, just, and terrifying. We also discover that our disobedience, our imperfection, our failures, our unworthiness, especially our treatment of Christ, means that we have no hope whatsoever. Our sin is like Ebola. It's a spiritual Ebola. How shall we escape? It's no good if we just change the subject. It's no good turning a blind eye to the evidence, as some people do. It's no good thinking we can handle our case when we get there, like I used to think. You remember our previous former Prime Minister, Gough Whitlam, said, I'll treat God as an equal if I meet him. Gough Whitlam, who couldn't make or could never have made one insect, suddenly coming face to face with the God of the cosmos. And we're not going to escape if we ignore the door that God has opened. It's interesting, isn't it, that in the siege, nobody settled for the chocolates in the Lind Cafe. The issues were too big. We need to learn what I was very thankfully helped to learn, which is that there is either we are cornered or there is a door called Christ. The full quote from the New Testament says this: we must listen more carefully to God's message. We're not very good at listening. We miss people's names. We miss the address that we've been given. We miss the small details. Those things are forgivable. But if you don't listen to what God has said, when God speaks as he did through ordinary messengers, angels, prophets, he expected attention. How will he treat us if we ignore his own son having come into the world? How will we escape if we neglect Christ? And especially as God has added to the coming of Christ great miracles, signs and wonders, so that we might know that he is God. I don't know if you realize how kind God is in coming as Jesus. You see, if God descended in his glory, we would be destroyed. But what he has done is he has come with his glory veiled, as it says in one of our carols, so that we might survive, cope. He still came with great power. He came with all the power of God, but he came with his glory veiled in order that we might cope. Now, don't despise or abuse his kindness in coming in gentleness and meekness when it's to actually save and cause your survival. That would just be reprehensible. How will we escape if we neglect such a great salvation? The four words at the end, such a great salvation. After the siege this week, you know, a message went out which said, I'll ride with you. It was a great message. It was sent by somebody who wanted to give the extension of friendship to Muslim people who would be feeling the backlash. One Sydney bus driver built on this, I'll ride with you, and he wrote to one of the papers this letter. Muslims, Jews, Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, people of no faith, all welcome on my 380 Bondi to Circular Quay and back bus. Come, ride with me. When I read that letter, I thought to myself, people will love that letter. And they did love the letter. Why would they love the letter? Well, because it's so inclusive. It invites everyone. It's also not exclusive. He doesn't say, you must ride on my bus. You need my bus. He just makes it an offer. It's for everyone. And you can take it or leave it. That is a very appealing letter. I actually thought as I read the letter, that's exactly how Christ speaks. He says, all are welcome on my bus. Come to me all, says Jesus. He's very inclusive. He invites the world. He invites the globe. When you read his life in the New Testament, you'll see that he includes all the ratbags and the outcasts and the unattractive people that nobody else would have anything to do with. And his bus is not just Bondi to Circular Quay and back. His bus is here to heaven. And I would have thought, given the week we've just had, that people would be pretty interested in a bus that'll go from here to heaven. The Sydney bus driver, of course, doesn't lose anything by driving from Bondi to Circular Quay and back. It's just his normal drive. Jesus lost everything to create a bus for the world. He left heaven, he came into the world, he went to the crucifixion, he endured the separation, he lost everything to create a bus that would go from here to heaven. Now, why is he so unpopular? Why are people so scared of him? Why is there such resistance to him? The finest person the world has ever seen. And I'll tell you, he's unpopular because his bus trip is crucial. It's vital. There's no other bus that does resurrection. There is no other bus. And so he won't say to the world, come if you want. That would be unkind. He says to the world, come or you'll die. You must come. That's why he says, I'm the resurrection. I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life, says Jesus. We may not like the claims of Jesus, but if they're true, nothing is more important and no one is more important. So just like there is perhaps one vaccine for Ebola, and just like there is one door that opened out of the Lind Cafe, Jesus is the one global solution. No one else can pay for sin but Jesus. Everybody else has got sin. No one else did pay for sin but Jesus. He gave his blood and he also took the separation. My God, why have you abandoned me? No one else guarantees payment for sin like Jesus. His resurrection shouts to the world, he's got the keys, he's got the keys. And therefore the message of Christ is global and eternal good news. Now friends, either this Christian message is a terrible fraud and you should attack the people who promote it, or it is the missing key to the world and you should grab Christ with both hands, with great joy. Just please don't go home and water your lawn after tonight. Don't go home and look for a movie as if the words which we've read in the scriptures are meaningless. To say to God your words are meaningless is neglect. It's a devilish neglect. Dorothy Sayers, who was a friend of Tolkien, Lord of the Rings Tolkien, and also a friend of C.S. Lewis, Narnia C.S. Lewis. She wrote once, "Those who say Jesus is dead and buried spoke absolute truth on one occasion, but it was the evening before the resurrection." Christ, you see, is not dead and buried, and Christ is not desperate like we're desperate. The salvation which he brings is so great because it connects you to your Maker, which you cannot do by being a good person. You cannot connect to your Maker by writing checks or going to church or keeping the commandments as if we could or being good. You will never climb to heaven with yourself. You'll never be your Savior. It'll never work. But he is able to connect you to your Maker because he removes the barrier between you and God, which he did at the cross. And he gives you friendship and fellowship with God, which will never, never end. So this great salvation, which God gives as a gift, not a trophy, explains why we're here. It tells you where you're going. Without Christ, your life is aimless. It's just day to day. You just have to commit yourself to trivia. Christ, when he gives you salvation, puts the script of the movie that God has placed us in into your hands. He provides the answers. He provides the security. He provides your future. Without him, you have no answers, no security, and no hope. There's just a shallowness, an emptiness, and a darkness that gets darker until it becomes endless darkness. Have you noticed that every fibre of the world says, "Leave Christ out"? Just shocks me. Perhaps it shouldn't. Every fibre of the world, the television, the movies, the personalities, the shops, they say, "Leave Christ out. Make us happy. Leave Christ out." And every fiber of God's love, his promises, his sacrifices, say, "Take Christ seriously." And he gives to those who turn to him a great salvation. But how will you escape if you neglect such a great salvation? I've always been very moved as I finish by the story of a student trying to explain Christianity to a friend at university. And the friend was a diver, a high-board diver. And the high-board diver friend was not listening and not interested to the message of Christianity. And one evening the diver went round to the pool complex and decided that he would do a dive at night. So he climbed up the stairs of the high-board and he walked out onto the end of the board in the darkness. And as he stood there with his arms out ready for the dive, he looked across and he could just see his silhouette on the far wall. And it reminded him of a crucifix. And he remembered what his friend had been saying to him, "Christ died for you." And as he stood on the end of the diving board, he decided at that moment it was time to surrender. And he sat down on the diving board on the very end. He admitted to Christ that he needed forgiveness and he asked for it. And as he was praying his simple prayer on the end of the diving board, the guy in charge of the pool complex turned up and flicked on all the floodlights. And the guy looked down from his diving board and saw that they'd emptied the pool that afternoon. It's a great time to become a Christian, isn't it? And everybody is in that precarious situation without Christ. How will you escape if you neglect such a great salvation?